Not bad.
Not bad. Not too shabby.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby.
Hi, buddy.
Hi.
How are
you? I'm in pain.
Oh, no. Do you want to get into why you're in pain, or is that just like a vague statement you'd rather leave out open?
I think I'm going to be brave and honest, but I'm not going to go into super crazy detail.
Wow, good for you. Speak your truth.
I'm in a lot of pain right now, and Kat and I have a working theory. I'm pretty sure I have a hemorrhoid, and I want to kill myself. I'm not happy.
And, no,
but we've had some postpones for this episode, and both of us just need to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the hemorrhoid cast for Jason. Please keep your thoughts and prayers. Come to Montreal and kill me.
Keep your thoughts and prayers about Jason's butt, guys. Please, it needs it the most right now.
It's like the fall of Berlin.
I'm so sorry. Like, hemorrhoids are not fun.
No, they're lame. And it's just like, I'm just going off word of mouth. Because, like, I've heard enough about hemorrhoids in my life.
Yeah.
I was catching the whispers of it. And I was like, there's no way.
No way
this is what this is.
The whispers of hemorrhoids.
Then, and I took, like, a hands in. And I was just like, I got on my knees on, like, the edge of my bed and just, like, laid down.
Mm.
And I was like, this feels like this is what it is. And then I fell asleep on my couch, woke up right in time to record.
Mm-hmm.
And then the proof was in the pudding. That's what I was dealing with. So this is a very, if I sound different, it's because it's a very leaning Jason today.
Yeah, you're barely in frame of the screen. It's fine. I mean, I don't want you to be uncomfortable, but poor you.
I'm here. Yeah. I'm leaning. That's what I'm going to do this. Lean this way.
You know those donuts that new moms get after they give birth? You should be sitting on one of those.
New moms and 26-year-old podcasters.
Sit on inflatable donuts.
It just feels like my butt is gasping for air.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
It's fine. You gotta go through it. I'm okay. Currently not suffering from any butt-related injuries, but there are a lot of things. The night is young.
The night is... Oh no, Kat, look out. They're behind you.
Oh no. There's just like a lot of stuff happening now. I'm moving soon and I have to pack up my entire life and move into a house. So that's exciting. It's exciting, mm-hmm. but also it's a lot of work, which I am excited for, but it's all happening at once. And I've taken on a lot of things, like 2 podcasts and a writing class and, what else am I doing? Moving, planning, furniture and paint colors.
You said furniture is like you're like, I know you're not lying, but you said furniture is like you're lying.
Yeah, it was like and
furniture. I thought you were gonna say planning bar mitzvahs.
I wish. I feel like it would be easier than this, but also the demands of a 13-year-old neurotic young man is not something I want to deal with.
Neurotic. I'm pretty sure you mean Jewish child.
It was implied.
Yes, yeah, just we here at YSEO would like to apologize to the young to the neurotic community.
I can cut that out. I'll cut that out. When I listen to it, and if I cringe, I'll cut it out.
It's not cringy. It's funny. It's very funny.
But yeah, other than that, like, lots of things going on. Normally it's fine. It's just like when you have like one chaotic day, you're kind of like, why, and questioning all of your decisions as to why you do these things to yourself. But tomorrow, if I get a good night's sleep, tomorrow I'll wake up and be like, what the hell heck was I even worried about, you know?
Yeah. That's what they call you, old bounce back cat.
Yeah. That's what they call me.
Bounce back cat.
Yeah, other than that, things are fine. Things are good. Recorded with you earlier.
Mm-hmm. I had a very fun time with that.
Yeah, you were a guest star on VomCom, which was fun.
I was indeed. We did Shrek.
So we are talking about Shrek. We dive real deep into Shrek. Mm-hmm. So if you guys haven't already checked it out, check out VomCom episode 6, 7. We do Shrek because it is a romantic comedy.
The gang goes Shrek. It was loverly.
Yeah, it was loverly. I love you and Molly, obviously. You guys are good together, even when I step out of the room and then you're talking to each other. So that's really reassuring for me.
Because normally when that situation happens, it's like George and Elaine, they did episode of Seinfeld when they're left alone. And the only way that they can bond is by talking shit about Jerry. I was surprised that we didn't have that. Because, like, I wish we did. I wish I had more, not like bad shit talking, but I wish I had more like good shit talk. I gotta work on that.
Yeah. I kind of want to hear what you guys would. I think I had that in my brain too.
I wish that's what we did.
I know. I had that in my brain too, that like when I walked away, you guys would just be like ripping on me for the things that I do to both of you. But then I walked in on the conversation. You guys were just being very like nice and casual with each other, like in a friendly, familiar way already. And I was like, oh, no drama. But you know, it's a good thing. These are good problems. But that is very funny. I like that you paint yourself.
My drink in my
webcam. I like that you paint yourself as you and Molly as George and Elaine, and I am Jerry.
Of course you're Jerry.
Oh, big compliments.
That's my favorite show ever. I fucking love Seinfeld.
I know. Anytime I see George, I think of the cover photo you had on your Facebook profile of George when he's getting massaged by a man.
Oh yeah, yeah, it moved. Yeah.
And it moved. So every time I see that, I think of you.
Yeah, we think of the gay panic. That's me.
Do you want to get into it?
Let's get into it. Let's fucking do it.
Going first.
Let's 80% speed run this episode so I can go lay down because my butt hurts.
You honestly, I can't believe that you didn't like take your setup with you and like be doing it lying down. If you want to pause and go reset.
Nah, I'm committed.
Okay.
I'm committed.
Okay.
My topic should be super easy. I'm going to keep it chill.
Cool.
And I'm going to take it easy peasy because I saw if you've been paying attention to my socials, you'll notice a bit of a trend going on.
Yes.
I'm going to do my topic on the documentary Feels Good Man.
Feels Good Man? Okay.
Do you know what this is? Feels Good Man?
I do not at all.
It's the Pepe the Frog documentary.
Sorry.
You know Pepe the Frog, right?
I do know Pepe the Frog. I did not know that he was a subject. He was the subject of a documentary.
I love that you know about Pepe, but you didn't know about this. Because this is a genuine, because with a lot of topics, it's like, you should check about guys farting on bees. You should really check that out. This is like a genuine, I really think you should see this documentary. And I think anyone listening to this episode should watch this documentary, Feels Good Man. You can buy it or rent it off YouTube. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm. You rented it?
I rented it.
Wow.
I like the good old days. Oh, side note. How good did Blockbuster smell? I loved that. I was walking the other day and I just kind of thought about it and I smelled it. I swear to God. I traveled back in time.
Describe what it smells like to you.
Popcorn. It smelled like popcorn and carpet.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say clean carpet.
It smelled like, blue clean carpet and popcorn.
Wow. Then I do know what you're talking about. Because when you asked me, all I could think about was carpet. That's so weird.
I would buy I would buy a Blockbuster cologne just to smell like that. That shit smells so fucking good.
I miss the smell of like movie theater popcorn.
I went to the movie theater for the first time in forever last week.
What the fuck?
I know. Montreal has, fucking weirdly enough, we have the curfew. Everything else is shut down, but we have some movies available at the movie theaters.
What the fuck?
I know. I saw the Demon Slayer Mugen Train anime film.
Weeb.
It was so good. Because I'm a weeb. I saw the Demon Slayer movie and it was fucking sick.
Oh, wow. I'm so jealous. I think the last time I saw a movie, it might have been Birds of Prey. And I think it was 2019.
That's even pre-COVID.
I know. Late 2019. Yeah, like late 2019.
Although, actually, now that I'm being honest, before, I think the last movie I saw was fucking the last Star Wars shithole movie.
Oh, yeah, you said that to me.
Something Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker? Oh, the last?
Some garbage. I don't know.
Why can't I remember?
That was the last movie I saw, and that was about December of 2019.
Hey, no pun intended, but that's a bummer.
That's a fucking my bum.
I'm so sorry. Okay. Please go on with your topic.
But yeah, so like before I get into like the movie, it's like so you know Pepe the Frog, right?
Yeah.
How do you feel about Pepe? Do you like Pepe?
I mean, yeah, I do. I think of the memes, he's like the least offensive one to me.
That's interesting that you say that.
Well, I think from what I'm remembering, but I feel like I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, because what's funny with that is, in many ways, you're right. In many ways, you're wrong. And that's kind of like what this documentary is about, because Pepe is, what's the actual term? Pepe is listed as a hate symbol from the Anti-Defamation League as a symbol of white supremacy.
Oh, fuck me.
And so what this documentary is about, so I'm going to do like some in-depth, like... just kind of run down some parts of the movie, but if I feel like I'm ruining it, not ruining, but if I feel like I'm giving away the experience too much, I'm gonna kind of jump ahead. So I'm just gonna hit brief points because I really think this movie is spectacular.
Okay.
But essentially, what the documentary is, it's about the creator of Pepe the Frog, Matt Fury, and his journey of what it's like to have something escape, have like a work of art escape from you.
Mm-hmm.
And just have something, it's kind of taken out of your control, and what it's like to watch as a bystander of something that you made became bigger than you could ever possibly imagine.
Aw, that's upsetting.
But what's great about this documentary, it's directed by Arthur Jones. And this is because there's a lot of people that were really skeptical about this movie because the movie is about 4chan culture, essentially.
Yeah.
It's about internet culture and 4chan and memes. And that is almost always never good.
Yeah.
This is the most competent movie about internet culture that's ever been made.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's like, and that's what makes it extra, and it's so necessary that it's like that, because it makes it hit so much harder what a bizarre fucking time we live in right now.
Yeah.
Just how well they encapsulate what's going on with 4chan, Reddit, how we share memes, what memes were like in 2008.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. But yeah, I love this documentary so much. So directed by Arthur Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to bring up the animators, because this movie has frequent animation cutaways and it uses animation in a phenomenal way. The animations in this documentary are so fucking good. So I just wanted to bring out their names. It's Jenna Caravello, Arthur Jones, the director.
That's nice. Cool.
Nicole Stafford and Kylan Woodrow. The animation in this movie are is so good.
Nice.
But, so essentially, the topic of the movie is Matt Fury, the director, the creator of Pepe the Frog, mm-hmm. who, if you don't know, is just this... He's this green frog that most of the time you just see his face, and he's either just playing sadness or happiness, but the first one, he would just say, feels good, man.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that. But one thing I like when I feel kicks off the... Also, I think some content warning for what I'm going to talk about is... It's like the movie is about racism, anti-Semitism, and like that kind of art. But like they ask him in the beginning, he shows you kind of how to draw Pepe, mm-hmm. which is, that's all I've been doing. Look at my Pepe I drew.
I saw you put it on your story.
That's not a bad Pepe, right?
That's a very good Pepe. That looks like a very tired, like Friday night Pepe.
That's me, baby. I'm a Friday night Pepe. So he kind of gives an example of how to draw Pepe, and they ask him, it's like, what do people get wrong when drawing Pepe? Mm-hmm. And Matt Fury says, probably when they put Pepe on the internet saying, like, kill the Jews. Because that's, as him, as, that's something what he had to see happen overall. But Pepe didn't used to be like that.
Yeah.
Pepe didn't used to be, he was originally... When Matt Fury, I think he's in like his 40s.
Okay.
Now, but Pepe was originally a creation for this comic called Boys Club. And it's such a cute comic, and I want to get a copy of it so bad. It's about four kind of anthropomorphic animal dudes that just like hang around. It's like post-college bro, early 2000s humor. And it stars Landwolf, who is just a big hairy party animal guy. Andy the dog, who's like a jokester. It stars Brett. I think he's a bear and he likes to dance. And Pepe the frog. Aww. And the comic from Boys Club that launched Pepe into the world was there was a comic where Andy the dog, it starts with Pepe in the washroom. Mm-hmm. And he has to go pee. So he takes down his shorts, puts them down all the way to his ankles. Underpants and shorts all, and pees completely free. Andy walks in and sees it, and then later, Landwolf confronts Pepe and says, hey, Pepe, I heard you take your pants off all the way down when you go pee. Why? And then Pepe just responds, feels good, man. and that frame of feels good, man, became just that little frame of the frog saying feels good, man.
Yeah.
It came so viral, and that months later, because before Pepe became big, the meme was just saying, feels good, man.
Yeah.
Because you could see people on workout forums, it started with workout forums, of if you finished a good workout, or if you did something good, you lifted, you got a new record with benching, I don't know fucking gym stuff. Mm-hmm. You hit a new workout ball. But they would post pictures of themselves in the mirror, and they say, feels good, man.
Yeah.
And then it's like, feels good, man, feels good, man, feels good, man. And then everything else starts saying, feels good, man. And they're watching, like, there's no way that's Pepe, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It most definitely was Pepe. But essentially, where it goes from here, it's as an artist, Matt was pretty excited to see how much Pepe blows up. And Pepe's all over the internet. And he's advised to sue. And he's saying, like, you should probably take ownership because he has a copyright. He has a copyright over Pepe. But he's like...
Oh.
But his whole thing is like, no, I'm not going to sue people for doing it. Like, I'm an artist. I want people to do things. I'm not just going to sue and bully people.
Yeah.
But that sets a precedent over some dark times ahead for him.
Oh, no.
But what I like about this documentary, they interview some really, really fascinating people. One of them is this lady who is so, I hate that I say it, but is so goals.
God, I didn't know what you were going to say.
She's like this 70 something year old English professor, professor that lives in England.
Mm-hmm.
So this old English lady with like bright pink and blue colored hair that lives in this beautiful house that has like chickens, and she has like a gazebo that she meditates in.
Mm.
And she has like a big kitty cat mouse pad. Her name is Dr. Susan Blackmore, and she's a psychologist / memetist.
Oh, my God.
And she wrote the book called The Meme Machine. And do you know what a meme is, like literally speaking?
Yes, like a like a photo with a caption?
Oh, well, that's an internet meme. What a meme actually is a meme is like a scientific term. Because, you know, the genes are passed on genetically.
Oh, yes.
And so she wrote the book on memes. She wrote a book on memes because she was saying that in Richard Dawkins' The Selfish Gene, she explained what memes are to culture.
Yeah.
Because if genes are passed on through genetics, culture is passed on through memes.
Yes.
Because everything is a meme. Hairstyles, clothing styles, cuisine. It's all memes.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is memes. So now that we have internet memes, you can see everything kind of, it's like condensed and so much faster. But it's everything that humanity does.
Yeah.
And then it goes to this.
So you're saying that culture is meme?
Culture is meme. Culture is all fucking memes.
Nice.
Then it goes to this one guy, Dale Barron. I believe that's his name. He's artist, writer, and this is where a big chunk of the documentary is about 4chan and the 2016 election.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how, it's so crazy to say this, but how weird it is to hear because of how central Pepe the Frog was to the 2016 Trump election. It's insane how big of a role this cartoon frog on the internet played with the president of the United States. And imagine if you created that frog and you're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
But Dale Barron, he is the artist. He's an artist and he's a writer of the book called 4chan, The Skeleton Key to the Rise of Trump. And he's a really cool guy. And I think it's guys like him and as well as our next subject that really give legitimacy to what this thing's about, because he really knows what he's talking about, and he talks about what 4chan is. And if you don't know what 4chan is, it's just like it's a forum image sharing website where people comment, tag all anonymously.
Yeah,
and it's the edgy one
You can
go on Reddit or you could go on edgy 4chan. And he explains the... Do you know what a neat is, Kat?
A meat?
Neat. N-E-E-T.
Oh, N-E-E-T. No, I do not.
A neat is... It can popularize as 4chaner term. It's an acronym for not in an employment, education, training... Yeah, not in employment, educating... not in education, employment, or training.
Oh,
so
boy.
Just like living in your mom's basement, playing video games on 4chan, that's what a neat is.
Oh,
and they
God.
Kind of formed like an identity around that.
Oh no.
And this is when they get somewhat of as famous of a 4chan as you can get, this guy called Mills.
Okay.
He's a self-proclaimed neat. He is neat as hell. And I recognized him because I think he's pretty, I think he's done some pretty infamous incel kind of videos.
Uh-huh.
But I'm very grateful he's in this documentary because you can't just have people you agree with in your documentary.
Yeah, of course.
And he really is very indicative of the 4chaner, and he has a lot of interesting things to hear about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the reason why I brought up neats is because, very pivotal to the Pepe journey is that Pepe became sad.
Yes. That's how I know Pepe.
Yeah, he's the sad frog.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a lot of people know him as. Because for the longest time, Pepe was feels good. He was, because what Pepe was to represent for the longest time is like smile and take ownership about how kind of gross you are. It's just like, feels good.
Oh, yeah, because you're peeing without holding and like with your pants down. Got it.
And just feels good, man. Everything feels good. But then Pepe kind of turns super sad, and he becomes this this way to express your sorrow or your how much you despise your plate, your point. What's the word? Like your stature in life. Your
yeah.
how much your life has gone away from you, and he's become representative of that. And low status, like ownership and pride over low status of life. And that's around the same time when I talked about in the Rage Comics episode, but then like Wojak, the feels man, his memes were really blowing up around this time of just feeling sadness in a community, and that's what 4chan became.
Yeah.
It became of just like this, these like young men, these young kids that just felt they dropped out of life and they found a community online about that.
Yeah.
And this one, they bring on this lady called Dr. Alex Kratosky, psychologist, journalist, and writer of the book Untangling the Web. And she brought up a good point, because the timeline of this is like when Twitter and Instagram was really blowing up, and it became the golden age, and it still is, I'll say it, for normies. And because it became this thing where of like you were expected to be killing life, to be good at life, to be sharing hashtag positivity, to be showing your beautiful body, doing beautiful things at beautiful places.
Yeah.
And then the damage that can do to, if you are just a miserable person that nothing happened to, and seeing all the people around you live their lives, to kind of double down. So like, if you're expressing this much joy, I'm going to express this much vitriol and jealousy and hate of your joy.
Yeah.
And all of this just stewing in people's inner rooms. And then a big part of this documentary is talking about the battle between 4chan and normies.
Oh boy.
Specifically girls over Pepe. Because it became a point when those goddamn pesky girls started liking Pepe. And you can see there's a lot of good videos of just young girls, probably like 2010, doing videos, dressing up as Pepe.
Yeah.
And then 4chan gets a hold of this, and like the normies are trying to steal our Pepe. Then Nicki Minaj and Katy Perry both post Pepes on their Twitter.
Oh boy.
And then they're getting so upset because these fucking normies who they have everything. Like, to them, their point of view is like they are stealing what our expression of sadness.
Yeah.
What we have to kind of take ownership of how miserable we've become, and that's the one thing that kind of acts as a shield for our depression is Pepe, and then these normies who have everything take it.
These normies who are appropriating our sad culture. Yeah.
Yep. It's when you watch it, it's the funny thing with 4chan is because they'll never, ever, ever understand cultural appropriation, even though it's like, it arguably is happening to them. I think it's cultural appropriation, but when you're involved on the internet as much as you can, as much as I am, and I see so much stuff, it's like, it's kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a gray area, but around this time, meme kind of became a thing, which was like Pepe's battle cry. It just so happens some videos became viral of frogs screaming because they fill up with air, they blow it up so much, and they just kind of scream like and that became like the angry Pepe. That became angry Pepe.
Oh yes, I remember this.
And now he's angry now.
Yeah. He's so cute.
I know, he's adorable.
I love this version of Pepe because he's so funny looking.
Which one?
The Ree.
Oh yeah, the Ree. Yeah.
Because his mouth is so big and his tongue is it's just very funny. He's just so upset. I think he's a little cutie.
He's so adorable. Now I think I'm gonna because I don't want to just go play by play for the movie. Some of the things that it tackles, Matt Fury, they go into, because Matt Fury as a topic, he's such a fascinating guy. He's the most soft spoken dad that you've ever met. He's this total hipster, clearly stoned out of his gourd all the time, but he's just like nice. Loves his kid. And he's becoming like a children's book writer. He wrote this, he illustrated this amazing kids book series called Knight Riders. Aww. And it's a wordless children's book about a frog man who becomes friends with, I think it's a rat or a mouse. Aww. And they go on this magical adventure where they get to show nocturnal animals the sunshine for the first time. Or like the sunset for the first time.
Aww.
And, who knows, or sunrise, either. But it's a really beautiful book. That's, if you have a kid, get a copy of The Night Riders. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially some keynotes where it kind of goes by is the movie that kind of tracks down how 4chaners double down on the offensiveness of Pepe, mm-hmm. to try to keep it from being co-opted by the normies.
Yeah.
Then it kind of goes into just some pretty dark moments of internet history where it talks about like the Beta uprising, the school shootings. It has a very hefty part about Elliot Rodger. And how intertwined Pepe was with Elliot Rodger.
Who's Elliot Rodger?
Elliot Rodger was the incel mass murderer that killed the one that he was like the one that got really famous because he would vlog his manifesto essentially on YouTube. And 4chan became like really attached to him.
He was the piece of shit kid who like in court was giving the finger and stuff. Was that him?
No.
Different kid. Elliot different Rodger, shithead kid.
Yeah, he killed himself before he got arrested.
Oh, okay, then never mind. Different kid. The fact that I can't even pinpoint which school shooter.
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to think, like, I'm just going to go by, because I really want people to see this documentary. I can't express to you how fucking phenomenal it is. So mm-hmm. I'm just going to go by just, like, quick little fun things that pop up. It covers the Trump election amazingly.
Nice.
And then they bring in an occultist and they get into the occult side of thing. His name is, he's so fucking dope. Oh yeah, John Michael Greer. He is an occult scholar on the. He wrote the book, The Encyclopedia of Natural Magic. And watch the documentary because when they introduce him, they don't explain that he's a wizard. And he fucking does telekinesis.
Oh, wow.
He walks up to a bookcase and like snatches a book with his hand out of the air. I'm like, what the fuck was that?
Like, really? Like, you saw it?
It's like clearly some weird sleight of hand stuff. But that's why you need to rent this movie so you can tell me what the fuck that was.
Okay.
So they bring in a wizard that kind of explains the dark, like how what he believes was dark magic used against Hillary Clinton. And it's like one of those Jesus. Things where even people on 4chan were like, yo, I think this is, because it's like what happens when millions and millions and millions of people focus all of their anger and sadness towards a person and then all directed at like an image. So millions of people focusing their thoughts and intents on an image and a person. It's enough to make you go like, oh, that's kind of spooky.
Yeah.
And then it kind of goes on to how Pepe became, Pepe the cartoon frog became a hate symbol, became a symbol of alt-right. It became a pen that David Spencer, the white supremacist, would wear.
Gross.
David Duke, the Klansman of the KKK, was retweeting Pepe's.
Gross.
Then it showed how Donald Trump was retweeting Pepe's, him as... Donald Trump tweeted himself as Pepe. How fucked up is that?
That's so fucked up. I saw that photo. I saw that, like, when I Googled Pepe the Frog to make sure I knew who, obviously, Pepe the Frog was. I saw one of him as Trump, and I was like, clearly that was made as, like, a slight against Trump. But really, he's proud of it.
It is
audience, essentially.
Terribly proud. But the way that they cover, I'm not going to get into any more specifics about the film. I cannot recommend this film enough. And they talk about and just what it is to the campaign to save Pepe.
Yeah,
was really good. But I guess I will spoil this is because as oh no, I won't spoil it. So essentially, as the topic, Matt, the creator of Pepe, his arc is. He learns that he has to take legal action against the most despicable people. Mm-hmm. There are people like Alex Jones. He was able to sue Alex Jones.
Yeah, I saw that too. It was like the creator of Pepe the Frog meme is suing, and then it cuts off, but it's just a photo of Alex Jones. I was like, good.
Yeah. Give it to him. They have Alex Jones and his deposition in this film where they sue each other over a cartoon frog. Then there's that one piece of shit vice principal who wrote a super racist kid's book using Pepe, and then he sued, then he was able to stop him. That's why it's a weird documentary, because you can't see, suing is the hero. Lawyers are the hero in this story.
Matt, what?
Fury, spelled F-U-H-R-I-E. And it kind of goes Matt to how... Fury. Because it shows how upset he was, because he's this very gentle, sweet, very left artist man. He's just like, these fucking assholes are using my cartoon for hatred. And it's so sad, because he'd be like, people would send me Pepes all the time, and they'd be like, I was never shocked. The only thing that would shock me is if they just used Pepe to express happiness. That's what I wanted.
Aww.
And so he had a campaign to try to save Pepe, which I still think should... save Pepe. Draw nice Pepes.
Yeah, draw nice Pepes.
And then it also explains what it's like for him trying to get it off Anti-Defamation League. Because he is the creator, his name is in the Anti-Defamation... And it was on the news, the hate symbol of white supremacy created by Matt Fury. And he's can you not?
He's like, that wasn't my choice. That wasn't my intention.
But it does end, I won't spoil what it is, but it ends on a very, very beautiful note.
Okay.
Where Pepe becomes a symbol, the symbol of peace that he's always wanted it to be.
Aww.
And it's a very, very cool thing. But yeah, I didn't quite know what to do for this topic, because it's like, it's just a movie recommendation. I don't know whether to get into specifics, do like a movie synopsis, just talk about the themes of it. I wasn't sure. I cannot recommend this documentary enough. Feels Good Man.
Nice. Thank you.
And draw Pepe's doing wholesome, nice things.
Guys, take back Pepe from the alt-right, because he does not belong there. He was just a gross little anthropomorphic frog.
Yes. Yeah.
God, that's so hard to say.
Gross little anthropomorphic
frog who's just trying to live his life and pee the way that he wanted to. And then he got overtaken by all of these white supremacists. It's not what he deserves.
It's fucking crazy. And then he helped very, 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 very much helped Trump become president.
Unintentional. That's not what Pepe was meant to do. It isn't his destiny.
I cannot recommend this enough. I'm going to send you the trailer. I love the trailer. A lot of people didn't like the trailer, but I like the trailer. I was going to say, the animations in this documentary are phenomenal. They're funny. They're cute. The color's beautiful. The message is so good in this movie. And it's just more... Watch it, if anything, for the wonderful time capsule that it is of the age we live in.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think it's so cool that there are actual people who specialize in things like memes, and there are documentaries being made about weird things in our culture, like bronies, Pepe the Frog, stuff like that, because it is so much. And because Pepe the Frog was an integral part in the 2016 election and essentially helped get Donald Trump elected. One of the many things that sort of...
A whole lot going on.
But it's just so interesting that now that's what documentaries are about.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
It's cool. Thanks, buddy.
It's not just about the Civil War anymore. Thanks, buddy.
Good job, buddy.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do actually want to really check that out, because I didn't know that he got co-opted.
He got totally shafted. And there's just so many good... It's the Trump election is so good. And just the way it captures 4chan and normies is so fucking good.
Yeah, I don't know too much about 4chan. I just know meme level jokes about 4chan, and I don't really know what the hell's going on over there.
I still stand by, as much as I hate 4chan, pretty much, there's still nothing funnier than green text. Do you know what green text is?
No, not at all, buddy.
green text, there's like those 4chan threads where it's like they tell the story through like, it's just like, it's in green text and it's just like line by line by line by line.
Oh, it's
like be me, 26-year-old, go to Starbucks, mm-hmm. get coffee, shit pants, my face when. Like that, I stand by green text is the pinnacle of comedy.
Wow. That's
the funniest thing. I'm going to start sending you green text.
Okay. I don't think I've ever seen like a real post. I think I've seen screenshots on other platforms.
One of my biggest laughs was a green text. It's like, I'm just going to paraphrase. It's like, it's called penis inspection day. It's like be me. Like I shit my pants on the bus, get to school. It's penis inspection day. They're going alphabetically. My name's Alan Aardvark. I hate penis inspection day. That's good.
That's so stupid.
Just imagine being Alan Aardvark on penis
inspection Poor Alan day. Aardvark shat your pants and it's penis inspection day. That sucks, bro. I started crying. That was so stupid.
It's so good. I love green text.
Well, thanks, buddy.
Of course. Watch it. Everyone watch it, please. It's so good. I watched it 4 times.
Wow!
Yeah.
Dang!
Yeah, I watched it quatre.
Quatre.
Quatre, man. Ew. So what you got, Kathy?
That's really funny that yours was a little bit art-themed, because mine is a little bit art themed. And like I said to you earlier, this was not my original topic. I literally did research on this 2 hours ago because what happened was I had a topic, realized I needed more time. And because I'm a procrastinator, I did not give myself enough time. So I, right before this, right before we recorded, I had the writing class that I'm in. And one of the lovely people, she wrote a story that she submitted for this week based off of this real guy. And when we all got into our groups and started talking about stuff, she explained like the historical background of her story. And I was like, hell yeah, this is everything I love. So I am talking about Han von Meegeren. That's not at all how you say his name because he is Dutch.
That's a name?
That's a name. Han, H-A-N. Von, V-A-N, M-E-E-G-E-R-E-N. I think when I looked it up, I think the way that they said it was Meegeren. Let's look up the way to say this.
Von Meegeren.
What?
Did you hear that?
I heard something. I didn't know what that was.
Von Meegeren. Dutch is so weird. It's so like, for a European language, it's so like Arabic sounding.
That's a lot. Like trying to learn French too. There's a lot of like the scratch in your throat.
Yeah. So it's Meegeren is the way Meegeren. It sounds, but I'm just gonna say
meringue.
Meringue.
Meegeren.
Meegeren. Han von Meegeren.
Han von Meegeren.
Han von.
Hold on. Let me watch this guy because he was saying it earlier and it wasn't stressful when I listened to him.
The Revenge of Han von Meegeren.
Meegeren. Okay, I'm just going to say Meegeren because that's...
Han von.
I don't have to think about it each time I say it. I'm very sorry. Apologies to our Dutch listeners if we have any. I think we do. I think there's like less than 1%. So
Sinterklausers. Klausers. Hey, fucking Sinterklaus. Fucking Kabushka, eh?
Okay, so he is relevant because he is the greatest art forger of the 20th century.
Art forger?
Yeah. He made art forgeries.
Oh, okay, sorry. That took like five levels to understand what you mean. He would like fake art.
He would fake art. He faked art.
Okay.
And did it so well that Nazis believed him. But I'll get into that later.
Oh, cool.
So, he was, and the reason why I really like this, I really like the world of art and art forgery, stuff like that, because it's so, like, yes, it's a crime.
That only really affects the rich.
Yeah, exactly. It only really affects the rich, and it's really just, like, rich people being like, So this thing that I spent millions of dollars on isn't the thing that I thought it was? And like, yeah, I get that's bad, but also, if someone duped you into spending millions of dollars, that's on you, bud.
Probably could have bought millions of dollars of food for hungry people.
Yeah. So... So yeah, I really like the, I like the, it takes a lot of talent and know-how to forge art, because you don't just like pick up a paintbrush and then go, oh, I think this is what this looks like, and then do it. It takes a lot. So I'm going to get into his life and yeah, just the fun things about him. So he was born in 1889. He was neglected and misunderstood by his father and was forbidden from pursuing his artistic side. His father wanted him to be an architect, and this is so sad, his father made him write, "I know nothing, I am nothing, I am capable of nothing," over and over again.
Oh my god, why are old parents are evil.
I know. He's like, ah, not that friggin' painting shit, be an architect.
Stop trying to have dreams.
No. Yeah, stop having your own dreams. So he...
Stop not being hit by me. Hit.
So he met a teacher named Cordeling, who became his mentor. And Cordeling was very inspired by this Dutch artist named Johannes Vermeer. And he's a big deal in the art world. And showed Van Meegeren how Vermeer manufactured his colors. So back in the day... You have different paints than you do now, obviously, right? So, mm-hmm. What's it called? When Meegeren was growing up, the paints that were available were very different from, like, the kinds that Vermeer were using, Van Gogh were using, because, obviously, paints change, all that stuff. Technology gets better. So, Cordeling was a big fan of the old Dutch artists and, like, just in general, older styles of art. So, he imposed that viewpoint onto Meegeren, so they didn't like the modern arts like Impressionism and Surrealism and Cubism. Cubism? They thought it, yeah, like the stuff that Picasso did.
I assumed it would be called Cubism and you misspoke. It's actually called Cubanism.
Did I say Cubanism?
Yeah. Okay, so like Cubism. It's You're such an out, dude.
Oh, man. You really believed me. You trust me so much, dude. I fucking said okay. Cubanism when I meant Cubism. Fuck.
Cubanism. Because I was about to ask, like, is Picasso Cuban?
No. He isn't. Oh, man. I can't believe I said Cubanism. Okay.
Oh, I hope I wasn't wrong. I'm going to be embarrassed if you go back to listen to it and you didn't say Cubanism, but I swear you said Cubanism.
Honestly, I believe you. Because I feel a little bit weird with words coming out of my mouth right now, so...
Little Freaky Friday.
Yeah, so his father forced him into architecture, sent him to a school in a place in the Netherlands called Delft. D-E-L-F-T. In 1907, which happened to be... the hometown of Johannes Vermeer.
Johannes Vermeer,
which is Cordeling's and Meegeren's idol. Little did his dad know. So he studied architecture, did all the drawing and the painting and stuff. He never took the final architectural exam because he was like, fuck this, I'm not going to be an architect. Did everything except for the final exam that would have made him an architect. And then so he went to go study art and drawing at The Hague in 1913. He had a child, married his baby mama. He made his money in like 1915. He made his money sketching posters and painting pictures of commercial art trade like Christmas cards, still life, landscapes and portraits, like just generic art, you know? He would be like a graphic designer now, you know?
He'd be wearing a beanie with a fucking, he'd have a Betty Boop tattoo.
Yeah, he would have a $400 chair and like a stand for his laptop and an ergonomic mouse, shit like that. And LED lights on his desk.
He could be found hitting on any barista he finds.
But yes.
To some success.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very successful. So, yeah, he became a talented portraitist. Like, he became famous in the Netherlands for painting. But then Dutch critics started to criticize him for his drawings and his art because he like incorporated too much of the old masters, and what they were really interested in was, oh look, I did write it. It is cubism. They were more interested in cubism, surrealism, and other modern movements at the time. So they were like, ah, your shit is old and dated and dusty. We like these weird shapes, and that shit had Picasso. You know that Picasso was a shithead, right?
I know. Yeah, I do know. But no more than I was surprised.
No, I mean, anytime people are like, oh, this old writer was an alcoholic and an asshole to the women he dated. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of that. Because I went to see my friend Curtis. He did a play on, he did a play with his friend. I can't remember what her name is, but it was about one of Picasso's ladies.
Mm.
It was...
He had many.
It was a stinging piece.
Yep. So a critic said, gift and imitation and talent limited outside at copying other artists' work. That quote doesn't make sense to me right now. So.
Say it again.
No, I'm not going to.
I respect it.
I think I wrote it down wrong, so I'm ignoring it. So Von Meegeren got criticized, hated everything that they said about him because he is a very, like, he thinks highly of himself. He thinks he's great. Because he thinks that all of the new shit is terrible. He's like, I'm doing what's proper. All of this other shit is gross. So he got very upset. And he was like, I'm going to prove them wrong with art. So then he started forging.
If I didn't grow up to end up hating art, I would love that sentence.
So he started forging works by Frans Hals, Pieter de Hooch, Gerard.
It's a terrible language.
Just say that. I'm butchering
it. Pieter de Hooch. Pieter de Hooch.
Maybe I shouldn't have done an accent on it. It oh, yeah, Pieter de Hooch.
Pieter de Hooch?
Have you seen Pieter? Like, which Pieter? De Hooch.
It's such a funny name.
Oh, I'm sweating, man.
You can see every inflection is like, De Hooch. De Hooch.
De Hooch.
De Hooch.
De Hooch.
De Hooch?
Okay, and then there was Gerard de Borch.
De Borch.
And Johannes Vermeer, who we've already talked about.
So,
Meegeren started forging? Forging.
Well, he began his forgery.
Yeah, yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. So he started all of this and then was a little bit more successful with the Vermeer stuff because Vermeer was not well known at the time and his work was extremely valuable and scarce because it was believed that there was only like 35 surviving pieces of art by Vermeer. So we're going to get into his perfect forgeries. So he bought authentic 17th century canvases. Mixed his own paints from raw materials using old formulas to ensure they would pass as authentic. He created his own badger hair brushes, which are similar to the kinds that Vermeer used. Yeah. He used phenol formaldehyde, and in brackets this is bakelite, to cause paints to harden after application, making paints appear as if they were 200 years old. Because obviously...
Cool.
Right? Because obviously, it's not enough that he just, like, painted in the style that Vermeer would have painted. It has to, in order for it to be authentic, it has to, like, look like it's that old, right? He did that with the paints, and then after painting, he'd bake it at 100 degrees Celsius, which is 212 Fahrenheit to 120 degrees Celsius, to harden the paint. And then he would roll it on a cylinder to increase the cracks of the paint. On the canvas. So it just looks aged and decayed.
really, that would fucking just destroy it, but it really just
ages it. It just ages it. It just, like, makes it, yeah, it just ages it. It makes it, like, kind of, like, textured, mostly, and less pretty, just, like, aging.
This is interesting, because I did just have an interesting thought, because when I hear that, my first thought is like, dude, just put that energy into making your own art.
Mm-hmm.
But this is so fascinating, and so the skill to do this, the imitation is the art.
That's what my brain
just connected, because, like, no, the imitation is the art. The fact what he does, what he can do is cool.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm saying. That's why I think, like, art forgery, however technically wrong it is such a big skill. Because then also, I can get into this later, but, like, yeah, art forgeries are important because, like, his work, at the end of the day, is valuable still. And, like, apparently, the woman who wrote the story, she was saying that his work is maybe not necessarily, like, as valuable, but it has its own, like, security detail when it's being moved around from, like, museum to museum because it's that important. Yeah, so, like, his stuff right now is as important because they're using it as, like, a teaching tool to teach, like, new and upcoming art historians the difference between real and fake. Yeah, so then he would wash the painting in black India ink to fill in the cracks. And this whole process and learning to perfect this process took 6 years of him just, like, yeah, doing this over and over again and perfecting it.
And that's like 6 years of, like, every day too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a whole fucking lot of work.
I know.
That's literally mastering a craft.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because he's not only just, like, emulating the way a famous artist would, like an actual artist did his own style. It's not like he's just copying. He's copying plus adding all of the extra things that would make it believable that it came from that time.
Mm.
Right?
I saw the badger hair, cracks, and so forth.
Like, making paint from raw materials like they used to? Insane. Mm. Absolutely insane. So, his, like, one of his most famous ones is the supper at, well, like, the first one that he made money off of, like, real big money, is called the supper at Emmaus. Emmaus?
Emmaus.
Emmaus. So he used lapis lazuli, which is ultramarine blues and yellows used by Vermeer and other Dutch golden age painters. He gave the painting to a friend who he asked to show to an art historian in Monaco, and his name is Bradius. And Bradius said that this is the masterpiece of Johannes Vermeer of Delft. So he even saw this and he was, like, a big deal in the art historian world, I guess, and was like, this is it. This is the best masterpiece painting of Vermeer. That painting was bought by the Rembrandt Society for, at the time, and this is the name of, like, the Dutch money, it's called guilder. So 520,000 guilder, which... 520,000.
Was that what it's worth today, or what they
gave? No, that's what it was at the time.
They're going that high of a value?
Yeah, apparently. Like, and then in euros, it would be $235,000. Or, at the time, it would be $235,000for euros. And then today, it would be $4,640,000 today.
Big money.
Big money. That's so, like, he... So after he got that money in 1938, he moved to Nice, France, bought a...
Later.
He was like, bye. At this point, he has, like, a second wife and several children, stuff like that.
He just like, kicks a dog on the way out. He's like, all right, fuck all y'all.
So he moves to Nice, buys a 12-bedroom estate. Is living his life in Nice, and then in September 1939 he returns to the Netherlands just as World War II was, like, ramping up.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine how pissed it would be if you get murdered by Nazis when you just
fucking made money?
You just made $5 million, moved to France, and then Nazis take over? Fuck that.
Yeah, right? Like, what a bad time. I mean, for several reasons, obviously. not just
no,
for
really, name six other.
Don't. Yeah, who else was it bad for? Oh man. So at this time, he kept making more forgeries. Here are some of the forgeries and the paintings' names: the Head of Christ, the Last Supper, 2.
This time is personal.
Exactly. That was the joke I made in my head when I was writing it down. The Blessing of Jacob, the Adulteress, the Christ and the Adulteress, I think, and the Washing of the Feet, and all of it in the style of Vermeer. So forgeries earned him between $5.5 million to $7.5 guilders. And then in U.S., that's $25 to $30 million today. Isn't that insane?
That's insane. How are you not just living in constant anxiety, though, of them figuring it out?
Oh, well, like, I think he had a big ego, and he's like, fuck all y'all, no one can tell. I did so much work. I'm a genius. Ultimate art bro. Right. So he lived a very luxurious life, obviously. He had all of this money. He said that he had 52 homes, 15 country houses, and mansions along the Amsterdam canals.
How would he copy? Like, would he? Because what year was this again?
30s, 40s. Okay, so now.
Was he able to, like, take photographs of the paintings? How was he able to mimic them?
So it's not so much that he was making forgeries of already existing paintings, I don't think. I think he was making
art style.
Yeah, he was forging art style.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, like, some forgeries, like, when you think of forgeries, like, I thought going into this, I thought he had just recreated famous Vermeer paintings.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, but then when, like, even when he did his first one, The Supper at Emmaus, because, like, the big thing about this, and because Vermeer only has, like, 35 surviving pieces of art, he used, like, the kinds of blues and yellows that the old Dutch artists would do, and like, art historians knew that Vermeer had spent some time in Italy, and that he would have painted something like this. So that's why they really wanted to believe that this was a real Vermeer.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, I think also that Nigeren, like, was kind of lucky in the sense of, like, the guy that he chose to copy, essentially, was one who didn't have a lot of art. People saw value in his art and wanted more things by him. I think he was lucky in that sense where it was, like, very little, so that anytime he did bring one up, it wasn't like if you copy a Van Gogh, because he had, I'm not saying he had, like, Van Gogh was, like, a basic, but, like, Van Gogh had left more.
But it was implied.
But Van Gogh, like, left more art than Vermeer did, right? So you have more to compare to. So even when he was still making, like, during the Nazi times, when he was making these forgeries, and he was, like, selling them to Nazis, they couldn't compare it to anything else, because anything that was really a Vermeer was being kept safe and hidden because of the war. So they just had to, like, assume that it was, because it looked so much like it, and it just, they, like, took his word for it, basically. So he's kind of lucky in that sense, where, like, all of these things where it's, like, there's not enough Vermeer art to go around to compare it to, but it is very much in the style, and it looks authentic and all that stuff. So people were like, okay. It's gotta be.
All right, wooden shoes, man. Let's see what you got.
So now we kind of get into, like, the demise of Nigeren. So there,
not the demise.
No.
Why is it always gotta be a demise?
I mean, he could low key be, like, a Nazi sympathizer. So, I mean, so there was a Nazi named Hermann Göring. I think. Yeah.
That he's one of the big ones, isn't he?
I think so. I don't really know the name of Nazis.
Oh, I pop filter. One second. I just want to make sure. Hermann Göring, he's, like, one of the big ones.
I think so. But by the way, like, they talked about him and how much, like, money he had to...
He was one of... If I remember correctly, he was one of the people that they... remember in Inglourious Basterds, like, one of the Nazis heading to the premiere that Shoshana wants to kill?
Oh, shit, really?
I think I'm pretty sure one of them was Göring, but I don't know. We shall see.
So, Hermann Göring, whatever, sold Christ and the Adulteress to Nazi banker and art dealer Aloy Mieldi. Sorry, this was Migrin. He sold this to another Nazi art dealer. And then Hermann Göring found out that he had this, traded 137 works of art just to get this one piece of art. Art that he didn't buy, art that he like looted, obviously. But yeah, that's how many pieces of art that he traded to get this one. Because he saw, because there was, it was so valuable, right? So at this time when Migrin's already making all these forgeries and stuff, it said that experts should have seen that the forgeries were forgeries because his health and his technique was decaying.
Okay.
Apparently he was a chain smoker and he drank heavily and became addicted to morphine-laced sleeping pills.
Let's go. What? That's my dream. Shit, my heaven is being like uber rich, but in like the early 20th century,
mm-hmm.
and then just fucking get going to the doc, going to the local pharmacy to get heroin.
It really is like sometimes you like go through your regular life and you're like, I don't want to pay taxes anymore. I just want to time travel and like just be shit to myself and not have any consequences.
Yeah, and just in a better time, just be on like the European countryside, just right before World War II, and just live it up.
Oh. Are we glamorizing addiction and other things?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, oh no, for 100%. Sure. Oh, 100%.
But that's what I want. Why do you think I'm glamorizing it?
But yeah, so like there, because even though his work had become shoddy, again, because he got away with it, is because there were no more Vermeers around for critics and experts to notice that it was shitty. They were just like, oh, Vermeer was falling off the wagon, whatever. So Hermann Göring hid all of his art pieces, including the Christ and the Adulteress, in a salt mine in 1940, and then it was found in 1945.
I heard with salt mines recently. I didn't know that that was a thing, but that's where people keep art and film prints.
Yeah.
Because the salt sucks the moisture out of the air so it doesn't kill them.
Exactly. Because, like, the worst thing for art is moisture. Being moist.
It's getting wet as fuck.
So he hid it in a salt mine, but then it was discovered by allies. And then because Göring kept like meticulous documents, Migrin's name was found amongst the receipts, I guess, was found amongst the receipts. So then he was arrested because he was deemed a Nazi collaborator and a plunderer of Dutch cultural property.
What's up?
Yeah, he was charged with fraud, aiding and abetting the enemy.
I hope whoever stamped that decree against him had your same
had my same giggle at the end of it.
You're corroborating with the Nazis, so we are sentenced to death.
Listen, if I got to sentence some Nazis to death, I would also giggle. I would still giggle. I stand by my giggle. Because Migrin is the most dramatic man, when they arrested him and found out and they were like, hey, like you forged this. He was like, the painting in Göring's hands is not, as you assume, a Vermeer of Delft, but a Van Migrin. I painted the picture! !
You fools!
You fools! It was me all along!
Twas I!
Literally, that's the energy.
I would love to be able to say that. Twas me the whole time.
Yeah, I know. Because he, like, declared that he was the forger, they were like, well... So they had him prove that he was the forger by painting in front of reporters and court-appointed witnesses. So, like, he was in a courtroom painting and proving that he could replicate something. And then they did, like, multiple tests on all of the inks and his paintings and all that stuff. They determined the alcohol that he used to age the paints. They determined the process that he did, because he was not like telling them everything. He would tell them some things, but he was like keeping it really He was like, you know? so he proved finally, they were like, oh, it was you. He went to prison for a year and then he got released. He returned to his home and then his health got worse. He had two heart attacks and then he eventually died.
No, I would hate to die that rich in that time.
Well, apparently he had declared bankruptcy in 1945, apparently, because obviously someone who gets rich so fast and is an egomaniac and has 52 fucking houses plus mansions, like, of course you're going to declare bankruptcy like 2 years later. You can't sustain that, especially you're on fucking heroin laced sleeping pills.
It's Advil, shut up.
He doesn't seem like a savvy businessman. You can't be an alcoholic and a chain smoker and be addicted to sleeping pills. Morphine laced sleeping pills. And have the mind of an artist and be level headed enough and business savvy. You can't do that. No. The Venn diagram is like,
it's like a well spread apart butt.
Yeah, exactly. It's like what you want to do to your butt.
It's what I have strategically done by subtly shifting the recording this.
Oh, man.
I use momentum of shifts.
Oh, man. Okay, so then...
to create two separate atlases holding up globes.
Your chair, your office chair is the atlas and your...
Okay. I am the
globe. Okay, okay. So after he died, his estate was auctioned off, like all of his things were auctioned off, and the proceeds went to repaying the buyers who bought fake Vermeers and stuff, and then paid taxes on the sale of his paintings. There is, I think, an American named Jonathan Lopez, who wrote a book called The Man Who Made Vermeers, Unvarnishing the Legend of Master Forger Han von Meegeren. He basically was like, he did a lot of research on Meegeren and essentially was like, at his trial, he painted himself. He like tricked the Dutch people one last time and painted himself as like a true Dutchman. And was kind of like, yeah, I purposely sold a fake Vermeer to the Nazi just to teach him a lesson. Because I hate Nazis too, guys. Me too. I hate them. When apparently he had, like, sent a copy of his art book or whatever to Hitler and was like, Dear Führer, I love you. He's like, here's all my art. I don't know if it was like, he's like, oh, Dear Führer, like sucking up so that he wouldn't. I don't know if he was like sucking up to Hitler to be like, hey, don't come after me. I think he was doing that and then also doing like a flex of being like, hey, Hitler, look at me. I'm a successful artist and you are not. Because that also sounds like up his alley, so I think he was doing that both. But yeah, he basically was like, no, I am not, I'm a true Dutchman, I'm not a Nazi sympathizer, all that stuff. But then, yeah, apparently when Göring was informed that his like top prize Vermeer painting was a forgery, it is said that he looked as if for the first time he had discovered there was real evil in the world. Isn't that so stupid?
That's pretty heavy.
That's so dumb. He was like, oh, my painting was fake? What kind of monster would do that to me? I'm a good man.
Oh, that's so fucking dramatic.
It's so dramatic.
There truly is a devil. There is hell. It's here.
Hell is empty and all the monsters are here forging art pieces. And then I will end on a quote by Meegeren.
By MC Hammer.
Talking about himself. So he said, my triumph as a counterfeiter was my defeat as a creative artist. And that is the story of Han von Meegeren.
That was so fascinating. Good job, buddy.
Thanks. Shout out to Sarah in my writing class who literally gave me the idea 3 hours ago. Thank you so much.
Let's go, Sarah. Is she hot?
She is an older white woman, Jace. I actually don't really know. I barely know what she looks like. But yeah, Def's your type.
Uh-huh. That's what's up.
But yeah, I mean, I really love the world of, like, art forgery and all that stuff. Because, again, it takes skill. Oh, I know this
about you.
It takes skill, man. Because you don't just, like... You don't just, like, pick up a painting and go, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to paint, like, Da Vinci. No. You have to study.
You're stupid.
No. There's, like, work. There's even, like, more work that goes into that. And I like how, like, if there's one thing I admire how, like, low-key spiteful he was, where he was like, you guys think that my work is too much like the old masters? Well, guess what? I'm going to make it so like the old masters, you're not even going to know. If it's by them.
I love spiteful acts. I love
that. I like petty spiteful things because it's very funny. Like the energy that people put into like proving people wrong is very funny and I identify on some level. On other levels it is like a lot of work and but also it's he is
love. pettiness and smiting and like what was the term? Pettiness. I was gonna say smitiness.
Smuttiness. Smutty.
Smut. What was the other word? It's like petty. What was the other word we were just saying?
Spiteful.
Spiteful. That's it. Being spiteful is self care. You're taking time to go like, what pisses me off?
You know what? You're right. You're listening to yourself. You're really looking inward and being like, what is this hate about that I'm holding in my chest? Let me direct it outward.
How can I direct this hate towards myself and other people?
But yeah, that's the story of Han von Meegeren. I think there was a movie that came out about him called...
Weekend at Bernie's.
Yes.
So how do you spell his name again?
M-E-E-G-E-R-E-N.
What, M-M-E-E?
M-E-E. Like Mary.
M-E-E. M-E-E.
G-E-R-E-N. Oh, so the movie is called...
Han von Meegeren.
Yeah, Han von Meegeren. So the movie is called The Last Vermeer. It came out... The trailer came out 7 months ago. And the guy... At the beginning, the guy in the photo looks like it's David Spade, but like with gray hair. But there's no way they got David Spade to play.
That'd be sick.
Let me just send you a screenshot of this because you're going to die.
Send it to me, woman.
Send it to me, woman. I like trailer. You don't like art?
No, I like visual art more than I thought I do. I just don't like artists anymore.
Artists?
Yeah, I don't like artists anymore. it's just my time in theaters left me just so bitter and jaded and annoyed.
Yeah, that's fair. Fair enough.
I just don't like artists and they think they're so good. They think they're so cool. But they smell like patchouli and they're annoying. We here at YSEO do not support patchouli.
If I can remember the smell of patchouli... I will let you know.
I don't like patchouli. Well, show me this David Spade.
I'm trying to. Hold on. Patchouli, more like Pa-yui.
Don't you sweet talk me. You find David Spade.
Hold on. I'm trying. How do you feel about David Spade?
I feel like he's probably... I've listened to some of his like he's appeared on podcasts. He's a good guest. I find him funny as a guest. He's very dry, quick, sarcastic, and very quick. He's a funny guest on things.
Interesting.
I just don't like his body of work is pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel so bad for the fucking mock exit, the fucking what the wrong Missy did.
Oh, yeah. Poor Lauren Lapkus.
But also, like, Oh, no, just poor Lauren Lapkus. It's just, like, the fact that that's what people know Lauren Lapkus for is...
I know.
It's a war crime.
I know.
One of the funniest people in America just was just hung out to dry. And, like, because I remember, like, Red Letter Media, they did Half in the Bag on The Wrong Missy. Mm. And they didn't know who she was. And there's, like, who the fuck is this? And they're like, this unfunny Lauren girl fucking sucks. She just is the worst actor. Not funny. I was like, oh, Lauren, no.
Lauren, look what happened.
No, Lauren got fucked. She got hung out to dry. And when you play, like, the heel, like, the wacky cartoon character in that movie, it's all on you that when it tanks.
Yeah. Because David Spade has made a career of, like, shitty movies. Yeah. And he's still, like, a millionaire, you know? So he's, like, come out fine. If a movie that he's in with you is going to tank, you're the one who's going down.
I can't believe. It's so bizarre. It's like people only knowing Lauren, like.
Yeah, it's sad.
Knowing Lauren Lapkus as The Wrong Missy is horrible.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
I love Lauren so much.
Did you get the photo?
Oh, no. Let me see. Okay, just right now, I haven't clicked it. I just see the.
Doesn't it look like him?
Because right now I haven't clicked on it. I just see it's very shrunken, and I see it 1,000%. But let me click on it.
Who is that?
Who?
The actual actor.
David Schlade.
Who?
David Schlade.
David Schlade. It's Guy Pearce. Oh, I said Richie. I always mix up.
Why Guy Richie and Guy Pearce.
Yeah. Guy Pearce is the actor. Guy Ritchie is the director.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Guy Pearce. He's the guy that they fucking slapped on all that old man makeup for Prometheus.
But yeah, so like, I thought it was David. Like, it looked like David Spade. I didn't actually think it was David Spade.
It really did. So, did you got anything else for me, Katty?
No. We were just like Googling.
Yeah, we were just separately Googling. I was like, hold up. We're recording a podcast right now.
That's so funny. No, I have nothing else for you. I hope I hope you liked my topic. I hope you had a good time and got some art history in your noggin.
I very much did.
See how both of our topics were a little bit arty?
Yeah, we're both arty. They're both arty farty. They're both borderline artistic.
Anyways, I had fun. Jason, where can they find you on the social media?
They can find me at Instagram at Brudahoole. That's BRUDDAHOULE. Brudahoole. Kat, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram and any other social media outlet at It's Catherine Ram. Jason, where can they find the podcast's Instagram?
They can find us at YSEO Podcasts.
Amazing. Amazing. Good job. And guys, check out Jason on this week's episode of VomCom. We talk about Shrek. We have a good time. We do a real deep dive. We have so much love for Shrek.
And you can get a taste of pre-hemorrhoid Jason. So you can remember what it used to be.
Jason pre-hemorrhoid, the happiest little boy. And now...
He had something to live for.
And now all he knows is suffering. So check out a happy Jason. That's it. That's all I have to say. Okay, bye, buddy. I love you.
Goodbye, buddy. I love you.